This is episode 83 of the Angry Tech News Podcast for Wednesday, June 5th, 2024.
This is the Angry Tech News Podcast at angrytechnews.com. Now your host, the Angry Programmer with a mic, Ryan Benrose.
Clicking too many things, almost forgot what the date is. It's Wednesday, isn't it? Another month, another Angry Tech News. I needed to do one anyway because I was going to do some tab clearing, but those tabs continue to be uncleared because I didn't get to too many of them because Microsoft released a whopper of a story and I pretty much had to make up a bunch of time to write it up because I think it's worth it. You are going to have to forgive me if I do a little bit of throat clearing into the microphone on this show. My mute pedal is, I've got a mute button, but I ain't friggin' using it. And you would not believe the amount of cottonwood fluff that I have inhaled over the last 2 weeks. Actually, if you're in the Northwest, you might believe it. Show plans. Still trying to get on a more regular schedule. I have all kinds of big plans for this show that keep getting thwarted by other responsibilities and also by my everlasting capacity for procrastination. My current project, which is close to done, is an upgrade of the RSS feed to finally really take advantage of all those fun podcasting 2.0 features I keep hearing about but haven't done much with. It involves a lot of backend stuff that is a script that I've written now that takes the notes file I'm reading right now and an MP3 file that I spit out of Audacity and automatically convert it and upload everything and into a full-on RSS file. It's a task that has been up to this point done by a bunch of copy and paste into WordPress, which is error prone, and as somebody who, you know, doesn't like doing mundane tasks, I always forget one thing or another, so I just want the computer to do it all for me. After copy and paste into WordPress, I then let Blueberry's admittedly amazing PowerPress plugin generate the XML. Now, don't get me wrong, I really appreciate Blueberry's contribution to podcasting. They've done amazing things. They have made it very easy to just throw up a WordPress site, throw some MP3s at it, and suddenly you have a podcast. I really appreciate that. But I need to excise WordPress from my workflow and just have it be a publishing platform. The only reason is to hang on to whatever shreds of programmer cred that I have left. If all goes well at this stage, nobody will notice any changes, so I don't even know why I'm talking about it, but the idea is eventually to have a one-button publish for the podcast using whatever podcast 2.0 XML features I care to use later, and then maybe even provide it to other podcasters who want that sort of thing. If I say any more, I will jinx it, so I'll shut up. Anyway, this podcasting publishing script is written now, but I need to test it, and for that, I need a podcast to publish with. So how about I stop musing and get on with some tech news? From the Clippy's Revenge Department, by far the biggest tech announcement of the week and the one I received the most personal appeals for my take on it was the announcement of Microsoft Recall, or Windows Recall. I should probably know what they branded it with, but given that it's Microsoft, they're going to rebrand it 7 times before release anyway. From the company that invented the embrace and extend philosophy, a philosophy where you look at what third parties are doing, build your own inferior version of it, and force it as the default into the base platform. They did it with browsers. Hey, this internet might be a thing. Let's make Internet Explorer. They did it with antivirus. Hey, why should everyone else make money off our security bugs? And they saw that other companies were making money by using Windows to force advertisements onto users and thought, hey, let's just put the ads directly into the start menu. Well, now Microsoft is doing it with spyware. Windows Recall is sold as a way to use AI to search everything you've ever done on your computer and recall something that you saw before. It does this by taking a snapshot of the screen every so many seconds. I've heard once a minute. I've also heard once every 5 minutes. Every bleeping computer says every few seconds. It might be configurable. Given that this feature is not released, nobody's really played with it yet. We just are going on the Microsoft announcement. Doesn't matter. And then they feed that screenshot into the onboard in Windows built into the OS AI, Microsoft Copilot, to pull out information from the text and images that are displayed on your screen. The idea being that you can then call up your friendly Windows AI Copilot and ask it questions about the things you have done in the past. Currently, this is only available on Microsoft's new special type of Copilot Plus PCs, which were also announced at the same time as Recall at the event last week, 2 weeks ago now. It's been a while, but to be sold by Microsoft's major laptop partners, Dell, Lenovo, Samsung, HP, Acer, Asus, are all on board to come up with new Copilot Plus PCs, which is really just a new spec saying you have to have particular capabilities in the processor in order to run the AI without chugging down the rest of the system. According to the marketing materials, the new requirement is the laptop has to, quote, have a turbocharged neural processing unit powered by Snapdragon X series and specialized for AI. At the time of release, the only people you'll be able to get it from is Microsoft, who are making the Surface PCs, but they say the partners will be getting them soon. So don't worry, before long, you will all be able to have this wonderful feature installed on your Windows 11 if you want it. When making the feature, Microsoft was at least aware that they were making something a little bit dangerous. The index for the Recall feature remains local and private on the device, they assure us. And also using BitLocker technology, which is basically encryption, is locked to the user account that made it. They also say that you can pause or stop the recording at any time, like if you decide you need to quickly, you know, stop recording everything you're doing and watch some of your important videos from Pornhub. I'm not judging. You can delete the captured content from the index. You can choose to exclude specific apps, basically specific executables, exes. You can also exclude specific websites, Edge and Chromium only it works with, because other browsers that are not Chromium, Edge, don't have the API hooks written in. It does not capture private tabs, again, Edge and Chromium only. And like I said, it's app level if you're not an Edge or a Chromium browser, which means if you're using Firefox, what you get is app level filtering. You can choose to exclude all web browsing or record all web browsing. Yeah. Oh, and the other thing it excludes, I don't believe there's going to be a dial to turn this back on, is it does not capture any DRM'd content because, of course, Microsoft places corporate interests ahead of its user interests. The feature is also completely disableable via group policy, aka the registry. It allocates 256 gigabytes by default to store data, which is, they say, approximately 3 months worth of snapshots. Anything older will be automatically deleted as needed. Now, just to be clear, this idea is not brand new of capturing everything that goes on your computer and feeding it into an AI. By the way, I did report last year on a very similar piece of software for Mac that tracks everything you do on a computer and feeds it into an AI. This is a third-party app for Mac called Rewind, which was released in 2023, offers AI-powered search via ChatGPT for me. It is a paid subscription, and the big difference is it's not built into the OS. You have to positively opt in and start open a relationship with a third party and start giving them money in order to do this. Microsoft has decided they're just going to put it into Windows itself, which is a huge step and not one I'm entirely comfortable with, because like all dormant Windows features, the code to run Recall will already exist on every single Windows PC, just waiting for the right control panel click or malicious PowerShell script to turn it on. I don't see any real consumer use case for this Microsoft Recall. They're selling it as a secretary or assistant so that you can remember what you've done. Now, if you're not entirely senile, you probably remember a lot of it anyway. It's cool to be able to come back with, hey, what was I working on? What did that web page look like? What did that document look like? Maybe you use it for version control because you can't possibly be putting your stuff into an actual version control. You're just like, what did it look like on April 4th? But it's a neat party trick, remembering every web page and email you've clicked on. But how many people were really demanding that? Not really enough, I suspect, to upside to offset the downsides. To be honest, the more likely use case is surveillance, so that someone else can remember what you've done. I could almost see this in an office environment, especially if it's not your computer. If you are just an employee and your boss, your employer, is tracking your work, measuring your productivity, see how much time you spend playing solitaire. Does anyone still play solitaire on Windows anymore? I kind of feel like they ruined solitaire when they turned it into an ad platform with cards, but what do I know? I don't even run Windows 11. But then, even then, if you're in corporate IT, you are probably already falling over yourself to disable this feature company-wide because of the immense risk it represents. So I don't see any corporate IT workers rushing out to turn this on for your company because it's, well, let's be honest here. The IT guys won't even have a chance to say no because the in-house legal department is going to shut down recall immediately once they realize that the data like this could be subpoenaed for discovery if the company gets sued. Oh, and speaking of legal issues, it's not even clear yet that this is legal in any kind of medical setting, for example, under HIPAA rules, recording everything that appears on the screen, or that it's legal for anyone under 13 or anywhere that someone under 13 could use a computer because of COPPA rules. And let's not even get into state surveillance. Okay, let's do it a little bit. Both your own government and foreign governments that have got to be wetting themselves looking at, oh, wow, Windows is just taking down everything that you see. Does anybody even remember the PRISM program from about a decade ago where all the big Silicon Valley companies, including Microsoft, were in bed with the NSA to give the U.S. government unlimited access to all of your private communications? Boy, I bet Microsoft sure hopes you don't remember that. Okay, I admit most consumers of tech news probably don't remember it either. And most consumers of tech news are not worried about government surveillance because, I don't know, maybe you just don't think you're a crazy conspiracy theory like me. So you're like, oh, our government is fine. Well, okay, you're not worried. I mean, you should be. You probably aren't. But here's something that you should be worried about. Data breaches. Microsoft has created the greatest honeypot ever to hit computing. This feature creates a store of data on your computer with more personal information about you, more detailed and valuable than any hacking tools on the market today. Hackers do not need to install spyware anymore. Microsoft has put it on your system already. They don't have to install a keylogger, a mouse tracker. They don't have to fingerprint your browsing history. It's all obsolete if they just get access to your recall database. Something better is already pre-installed. Now, Microsoft swears that they will not dip into the recall data in order to profile you and sell you targeted ads, or, you know, in the not too distant future, to determine your social credit score and ban you out of a ball game or concert because you viewed the wrong website or looked at the wrong memes. But when was the last time you trusted a big corporation not to go after the easy cash cow? Oh, sure, I absolutely do believe that the people who developed this feature, the people working on recall right now, have no intention of raiding the pantry for some cheap data on every user of Windows so they could sell ads to you. That sort of thing usually happens 2 or 3 reorganizations later when the original innovators have moved on to another feature. The feature has been handed off to a new manager and some maintenance programmers with a new bean counting philosophy and a directive to take this old technology and make it profitable again. So I give it 4 or 5 years. Coincidentally, the UK Information Commissioner's office issued a statement indicated that they are worried about exactly that and are, quote, making inquiries to, quote, understand the safeguards in place at Microsoft. If anything comes of that, I'll let you know. Everything you can see on the screen, Recall also sees, and Copilot ingests into the local AI model. Just to be clear, what is going in? Passwords, if they're displayed. A lot of people do. If they're not just generating asterisks, it's showing up. If you visit your banking site, your account number, your balances, everything you see, it sees. Your profile data, all of your social media accounts, your confidential documents, confidential communication. You're working on some kind of really secret Word doc. Oh, it's going to be captured. Are you a whistleblower at Boeing trying to get information out to a journalist? Well, you're already probably screwed. Any porn you look at, Yeah, the stuff you don't want anyone to see, that really kinky crap. I'm not kink shaming, but Copilot might. All of this goes into an index easily searchable by anyone with access to the Copilot on your PC and your user account. Now, you can go into the control panel and tell it to block apps, but that gives, like I said earlier, gives a granularity of Microsoft Word or all of your email, or if you're not running Edge, your whole browser. And let's be honest, how many people are going to get the update and go, oh, right, this is the one with recall. I better go into the control panel and turn off all of its worst tracking. No, we have decades of research that say most people leave things at default, even when they know that the switch is there, which, by the way, is no guarantee, considering this is not going to come out as Microsoft saying, hey, would you like a recall? It's going to come out with a forced automatic system update, probably with a really intuitive name like KB54321987-6. Now, the recall database is BitLocker encrypted, which protects against the kind of exploit where somebody gets a hold of your hard drive. At least they're doing that, and I appreciate it. It protects against the kind of attack where an attacker exfiltrates the cold stored data or pulls the database from another user account or you accidentally upload all of your data to Facebook. Oh, wait, that's not an accident. Facebook wrote that feature. But remember that the data has to be decrypted in order to be used by the Copilot AI. So BitLocker really does nothing for the kind of exploit where malware can simply grab the unencrypted data in transit from the running operating system while you're logged in. Now, there is an adage in the halls of Microsoft, a trope really, that, well, the moment an attacker can run code on your system, all bets are off and there are no more security barriers. This is practically a mantra at Microsoft as a way of saying, well, don't allow remote code exploits. Don't allow malicious code to run on your system. But anybody who has seen anything in Windows for the last 30 years knows that malicious code is going to run. And the trope at Microsoft tends to be used as a way to ignore defense in depth. And that has definitely happened here. To pull a quote that I really liked from the Bleeping Computer article on this one, basically, if you got infected or fell for a social engineering attack, it's your fault that all of these bad things will happen to you. It's funny, Bleeping Computer also pulls up a quote from literally last month when Satya Nadella, in an all-employee memo, had this to say: if you're faced with a trade-off between security and another priority, your answer is clear. Do security. In some cases, this will mean prioritizing security above other things we do, such as releasing new features or providing ongoing support for legacy systems. The best and most effective and possibly only way that they could have made recall more secure would be by simply not having done it. That would have been choosing security. But apparently, the directive from Nadella was so many words. One of the only commentators that I can find anywhere who actually likes Windows Recall is Paul Theriot, a person who has made it his career to love everything Microsoft does, even when he hates it. In a recent article titled No Recall Is Not Here to Steal Your Data, or something like that. I didn't write down the title, so let's pretend that was it. Theriot talks trash about everyone who cares about privacy. He calls them chicken littles and says privacy advocates would he knew that privacy advocates would immediately stomp all over this functionality before they even tried it out. In fact, he mentions that the one device only limitation, the fact that the database is encrypted and locked only to your user account only on one device, is actually way too limiting, which it limits some pretty cool use cases. That much, Mr. Theriot, is true. You can't recall what you did on the office computer in the den or what you did on, you know, your daughter's. Let's not go there. He also points out that if you reset your PC, which is if you're not sure what PC reset is, it is a Microsoft feature designed to fight registry cruft and software rot by letting you throw the baby out with the bathwater and completely going to a brand new install of Windows. If you reset your PC, you lose your recall database as well, which is. Makes it more difficult to recall things, I guess. You're going to have to rely on your memory. He also points out all of the safeguards that I already mentioned about the database being encrypted, that the data only lasts a few months until it's purged by some other code running, assuming that code's running, that it's locked to one user, that not even admins on the same computer can see it. Paul, I got to be totally honest with you. You and people at Microsoft might be the only people in the world who actually sets up separate users for each member of the household and asks people to log out and back in when a new person sits down. Maybe that happened. I'm sure that happens in a lot of corporations, or in a PC enthusiast home like yours. But I still don't believe that happens in the real world. I think most computers have one user account, and whoever sits down, which means you got access to each other's browsing history and now pictures of everything they ever displayed. Thurrott points out that it only runs on specific PC hardware, the kind that Microsoft will no doubt strongly push for all computers going forward. So I think that's a limitation that is going to go away. Although your legacy computers that you're running right now will never work. So you will have to upgrade planned obsolescence for the win. He points out that it doesn't record filtered apps, filtered web pages. You do use Edge like a good little Microsoft customer, right, Paul? He points out all the user-facing controls. All of his points are valid as the feature stands right now, from what we know about the feature. These safeguards are in place and would certainly help a lot if they work. But all of this boils down to one problem in my mind. Microsoft is putting code in every copy of Windows that can screen cap everything you ever do on your PC and store it indefinitely. Every other point that I mentioned, every other thing that happens with this is additional code that they added in order to limit the damage that that one thing can do. Paul Thurrott is correct. Recall is perfectly safe as announced, as working under the assumption that Microsoft are competent and can write their code without bugs. It is limited because it has to be. Not even a company with as much hubris as Microsoft would release it if it weren't at least safe on paper. But all of this assumes that none of the limiting code that I mentioned has a bug, that the group policies work as they should, that none of the code has a vulnerability, that the rest of your system is also secure, that you or someone who shares your account don't fall victim to social engineering, and most of all, that you trust Microsoft with this power. Not trust them not to create a backdoor, trust them not to sell this lucrative store of personal marketing data, trust them not to share what you look at with authoritarian governments. And trust them to never, ever, ever change their position on this, even after they realize in a few years, after people have gotten used to the idea and all of Thurrott's chicken littles have quieted down, that, I don't know, maybe no one uses the feature because it's too limited. And that maybe if they just loosened up some of those silly privacy protections, that it could really shine. And then, hey, maybe the company can make a little bit of extra coin in the process by using that wealth of data to more personalize the ads in your start menu. From the weaponized Wi-Fi department, this one comes from a write-up by security researcher Brian Krebs, who I follow on the Mastodon and the Fediverse. I appreciate that you post there, Mr. Krebs, but he is one of the most difficult follows that I have because he occasionally has magnificent insights into the computer security. He also uses the same feed to display his derangement about a particular former president and unironically forward links to The Atlantic. Generally display his De Niro-level derangement. Anyway, proving that expertise in one area doesn't necessarily transfer over into other areas, but this isn't a political show. From his security blog, quote, researchers at the University of Maryland say that they relied on publicly available data from Apple to track the location of billions of devices globally, including non-Apple devices like Starlink systems, and found they could use this data to monitor the destruction of Gaza as well as the movements in many cases and identities of Russian and Ukrainian troops. The root of this problem is in Apple's Find My network, also very similar in Google's Find My device, which is a very similar network. Long ago, when the company started building out location APIs, they realized that GPS by itself was not enough. Anywhere that there was GPS interference, or they just couldn't get line of sight to enough satellites, the GPS was just not very accurate. And they wanted it to be accurate. They wanted to be able to pinpoint each device within a few feet. But what they did realize is, as long as you're near a city, which is where most of these line of sight and interference issues happen, there are dozens of Wi-Fi access points all around you, many of which don't move. They just sit in the same closet for years, constantly broadcasting the same identifying data over open airwaves. This could be used to improve location services, and so they did. Nowadays, whenever you're out and about with all your phone's wireless radios active, one of the things your phone is doing is recording every Wi-Fi hotspot that it encounters, every home router, every Starbucks, every other phone in range that has Wi-Fi on, and recording them and tracking their locations. Now, the other phones in range move around, so they're not very useful for geolocation, but you can be certain the data is collected anyway. More on that later. It collects the SSID, which is the name of the Wi-Fi point, as well as the hardware BSSID, which is usually the MAC address, the GPS coordinates of where it is, the signal strength, and it sends all of that off to Silicon Valley to be number crunched and stored in a database at either Google or Apple HQ. Then, whenever an app on your phone wants to know its location, it checks the GPS radio, sure, but it also sends out an API call to the mothership's massive database of Wi-Fi points in order to better calculate your exact location. This sounds pretty groovy. I mean, none of us ever consented to this kind of massive data collection, or at least, you know, very few of us read the part of the Android and iPhone EULA where the company grants themselves the right to do it. But by enabling Wi-Fi, you're sort of broadcasting that information out there, so I guess it's public data. Here's where Apple and Google differ, though, in their implementations. When an Android phone wants to refine its location using Wi-Fi, it sends Google the GPS coordinates and a list of nearby APs that it finds. Then Google's servers calculate from there and send back an updated location. When an iPhone wants to refine its location using Wi-Fi, it sends the GPS coordinates to Apple, and Apple sends back a list of up to 400 Wi-Fi access points that have been seen in that location in the vicinity, and then Apple does the calculation on the iPhone. Here's where things got interesting for the UMD researchers. By using geofencing with Apple's API calls, they were in an emulator, they were able to track every device emitting a Wi-Fi signal within a given area, just using Apple's API calls. This in itself is worrisome enough for privacy if it's just your home router, but remember how I noted that most Wi-Fi signals these days are from cell phones that move around? Data from these devices is not particularly useful for geolocation, but using multiple calls over time to Apple's API, the researchers were able to create a global map of more than 2 billion Wi-Fi-enabled devices located globally and track their movements over a whole month, tracking individual devices in and out of defined geographical regions, including war zones, classified military sites, etc. In one example given, they were able to cross-reference the SSIDs connected to Starlink terminals and refugee camps in Ukraine. They said that with this data, they could theoretically identify troop deployment sites, insurgent bases, and even identify individual combatants or refugees based on where their phones go. In theory, using the proper scripts and this API over time, you can track anything with a Wi-Fi signal that moves anywhere in the world. I shudder to think how many trillions of government dollars have been spent by three-letter agencies trying to do this, to track people wherever they go. And here Apple is giving the data away to anyone with an API key. In case it wasn't clear, there's nothing about this that requires you to own or operate an Apple device in order to be tracked like this. Simply emitting a Wi-Fi signal anywhere near an iPhone, iPad, AirTag, or anything else that participates in Apple's Find My network will get all of your Wi-Fi data, the SSID, the MAC address, the location, the IP address, which IP address itself can often be used to get more details on your identity, all of that will be added to Apple's database. If you have never been an Apple customer, if you've never held an iPhone in your hand, you are still in Apple's database if you have ever turned on Wi-Fi. So how does one defend against such an invasion of privacy? Well, the first and most obvious and effective method is to turn off Wi-Fi on your device when you go out. Actually, no, the most effective is to leave your device at home when you go out. But I acknowledge that anyone under 35 is genetically incapable of existing without being electronically connected to everyone else in the world simultaneously. And if they ever found themselves alone without the ability to be distracted at any moment by a social media notification, they might face the risk of having to deal with their own thoughts, which would quickly turn them into a gibbering puddle of offline insanity. Nobody wants that, so I've stopped suggesting it. But you can still turn off Wi-Fi when you go out. A lot of devices, Apple included, will automatically randomize the BSS ID periodically, obfuscating the device's identity when connecting to different access points. Not a perfect solution, but not bad. This does make it makes tracking more difficult. It doesn't make it impossible. If you spend enough time in any given location, a sufficiently advanced pattern recognition algorithm connected to the API, often referred to by its marketing name of AI, will be able to connect the different random IDs and still pinpoint your phone. More so, any device in Apple's or Google's Find My network must obviously be able to identify itself to Apple or Google, regardless of the randomized ID. There's encryption involved in this handshake, but for the API to work, the real device ID must be made available. So again, not a great solution. Well, what about your home router, which kind of needs to be online to function? Well, what if you want to block that? What if you don't want your home router to be part of Apple and Google's geolocation setup? Well, Apple and Google have agreed on an official solution, which is buried in the fine print of their terms of services, which is simple. You just change the name of your router's Wi-Fi access point. The companies promise, pinky swear, not to index any access point whose name ends in the string _NOMAP. So, for example, the only suggested way that I, a non-Apple customer, in a household which contains zero Apple devices, can personally protect my access points from being invaded by Apple every time someone with an iPhone drives past my house is to change the name of my home router from Bemrose House to Bemrose House _NOMAP, which clearly rolls right off the tongue. I merely need to rename my home network to something more confusing and harder to remember, harder for my guests to type in, and then enter that _NOMAP name into every single device that I or any of my guests want to connect, and probably it'll work if you trust Apple and Google. This is a classic Silicon Valley opt-out scheme where the big corporation has decided to do something clearly shady and invasive automatically to everyone everywhere and then demands that, well, if you're one of those crazy people who doesn't want this thing that we've done, then you can just jump through a bunch of hoops in order to get back to the level of privacy that you already had before we decided to do the thing. It's like Apple is speeding down the sidewalk in a busy pedestrian area, displaying a small placard under the dashboard that says, if you don't want to get run over, get off the sidewalk. And they need to be careful, because that's Tesla's thing. From the end of an era after an era after another era department, ICQ, one of the oldest instant messaging services on the net, is shutting down, finally. The service, which was so bare metal it didn't even have usernames, only user numbers, is no longer going to be in service. ICQ was originally developed by an Israeli company called Mirabilis, who was then later bought out by AOL at the height of the dot-com bubble for $407 million, back when America Online had $500 million in investment money just laying between its couch cushions. It was then, almost another decade later, sold to Russian media company VK in 2010 for an undisclosed amount that you can bet was less than $400 million. VK kept it going for another decade and a half before announcing this month that it will shut down on June 26. The ICQ site recommends that if you are still using the service that you move to the more modern VK Messenger. I only brought this because I was a big ICQ user back in the day, so I'm going to pour one out for the service. ICQ is what introduced me to instant messaging. I had a 7-digit ICQ number. If you were around back then, you know what that means. Yeah, that's right, OG. I actually remember my ICQ number to this day, and for a while it was my phone unlock pin. That distinctive showed me just how convenient it is to be instantly connected to all of my friends and simultaneously taught me how incredibly distractive and amazingly unproductive instant synchronous communication can be. And for that, I appreciate ICQ. It taught me to put the phone in the drawer and shut off notifications early, early on before most of you ever had smartphones. Turning off my ICQ client so that I could get some work done quickly became a critical and enjoyable part of my daily work ritual, a lesson which I still find it distressing how few people understand. Okay, that Windows recall story was a little too long, so that's really all the stories you're getting today. If I can make time, you will get something else next week. I really intend to get back on a weekly schedule, and I want to try to do this live either Tuesday or Wednesday mornings, probably at the same time slot for those of you listening live, which, maybe 3 or 4. I don't know. Anyway, many angry thanks go out to the people who are supporting this show through its continuing schedule problems and inconsistency. Many angry thanks to Oystein Berge, Steve Edwards, Rachel Zimmerman, Faye Zilla, Christopher Reamer, and also very much to Eva Terry, whom I forgot to mention last time, but has been consistent in sending value to the show, even with no show. So thank you all. You are the reason why I do this. You are the reason why I haven't given up on this, throwing my hands up and going, I don't have time for this, because I really enjoy doing this. But if it was just me, I know I wouldn't. Angry Tech News is produced on the value for value model. We don't take sponsors, we don't play ads, and we don't charge you to listen, but we are funded by your donations. So if you received some value from listening to this show and you think I deserve some value for making it, please send some value back. In fact, please send some value back to every podcast you listen to on the value for value show. Podcasting is the last bastion of non-corporate, non-government controlled, free, open media. You can't get the kind of things that you can say, do, and experience and listen to on a podcast. You cannot get from television. You cannot get from newspapers. You cannot get from podcasting is one of the last true decentralized forms of media that anybody can create a podcast. Anybody can go out and install WordPress with the PowerPress plugin. Anybody can get a microphone or record into your, sit in the passenger seat of your car and record into your phone. Although I don't go in for that whole video thing. I think that's a little newfangled tech for me, but please, 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 if you enjoy a podcast, go out, support it. Sometimes the support, the podcasters love when the support is monetary, but we also love if you just drop a comment, if you just go out to the podcaster, however you contact them, and say, hey, we really like what you're doing. Keep it up. I really like this story. I think that you went way too far. That Windows recall thing, I totally trust Microsoft, and you really should, you should lay off of them, because that recall thing was probably, if that's what you want to say, please say it. We love feedback. We are funded by your donations, though. If you want to donate to Angry Tech News, go to angrytechnews.com and click the donate button. Send whatever you think this episode was worth to you, whether it's $5, $55, or maybe just a snapshot of whatever I've got on my screen right now. That's it for now. I'm Ryan Bemrose, the Angry Programmer with a mic. I'll be back next time with more Angry Tech News.
This has been Angry Tech News with the Angry Programmer, Ryan Bemrose, at angrytechnews.com. Stay angry. Stay angry. Stay angry.
And that didn't take long. A story that I didn't notice until after recording this show. Wired Magazine is reporting that security researchers using the preview version of Windows Recall, because the feature doesn't even release until June 18th, but on the preview version, what they discovered is a place where the screenshots collected by Recall are being stored unencrypted, and the researchers have already put together a proof of concept to collect and exfiltrate all of the Recall data to another computer, presumably in the cloud or on a hacker's computer. So I'll put the link in the show notes. Way to go, Microsoft.